All right, thank you, Angus. As Angus mentioned, I'm going to continue some of the same discussion, but I'm going to put a little different twist on it. I'm not going to say anything specific about bees. This is just another component of some things that we need to work on, just looking at the value of insecticides in our production systems, because there are really two components to this story. It's not just the risk to the bees, but also what they're providing to us for crop protection. So I'm going to start off just a little bit talking about what are the neonicotinoids. And you can see I have a sentence here. It's basically a class of insecticides that work on the nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. And I know that may not mean much to a lot of you in the audience, especially some of our consultants. But the two important components of the neonicotinoids in terms of bee health, and Gus touched on a little bit, is the fact that they're systemic. Whether we use them as a seed treatment or a foliar spray, they move into the plant, and so they stay in the plant tissue for an extended period of time. They can't be washed off the plant once they're inside. And then the other component is that they're nerve poisons. That's what that nicotinic acetylcholine receptors means. That's receptors within the nervous system of the insect that these insecticides affect. Just some examples of the neonicotinoids. Of course, imidacloprid, which is our oldest, which was the first registered neonicotinoid, and some examples are like Enmyrapro, Galcho, and Aris. You've heard some of those today. Thiamethoxam, things like Centric, Cruiser, and Evicta. Clothianidin, have a foliar spray with Belay, and also nips it inside in poncho in other crops, corn primarily. And then acetamiprid, which is Intruder, that's been around for a while. So those are some of the products that we use, not only in cotton, but in a lot of our crops. So what are they used for? You heard Scott talk earlier about the seed treatments. Primarily, imidacloprid and thiamethoxam are used as seed treatments, and in cotton, we're mainly targeting thrips with those seed treatments. And then as foliar sprays, at least in the mid-south area of the country, we're targeting tarnished plant bugs, and then also cotton aphids. The neonics are used all across the cotton belt for control of aphids. So, for this discussion, we need to talk about the foliar insect control costs in the Mid-South, and this is going to impact the value of the neonicotinoids in the Mid-South compared to other areas of the country. And a lot of the things that I present today may not be completely applicable to the entire country, but it is kind of the worst case scenario in showing the value of neonics in the Mid-South, and it shows where we could end up in some of the other areas of the country if we lost neonics. So if you notice on this graph from 1987 to 1995, we had some big swings in our foliar insect control cost, but we averaged somewhere right around $60 an acre that we were spending. Bollgard cotton came out. That reduced our overall foliar insect control cost and basically stabilized it some. And then boll weevil eradication started in the Mississippi Delta around 2001, and that further reduced some of our foliar sprays. But you notice in around 2004, 2005, we started getting resistance to the organophosphates in tarnished plant bugs. We also had already had resistance to the pyrethroids in tarnished plant bugs. But it's after that point, right after boll weevil eradication, we first documented resistance to the OPs, that our insect control costs basically just skyrocketed. And this is just foliar control costs. This doesn't include the cost of seed treatments and the cost of tech fees. So this is basically where we are in many areas of the Mid-South right now in terms of insect control. It's just not a sustainable system. And as I mentioned, the tarnished plant bug is our driving factor in Mid-South cotton. It's what drives all other insect control programs from a foliar insecticide standpoint. And as I mentioned, there's some differences among the different areas of the Mid-South. For instance, this is just showing insect number of applications in the hills versus the delta regions of Mississippi. As you can see, in the hills, we don't make nearly as many applications for tarnished plant bugs as we do in the delta, and that's been well documented and talked about for a long time. Another important thing is evolution of our insecticide use rates. Is we've gotten resistance to the organophosphates, Biodrin and acephate. We've essentially doubled and tripled the rates of those insecticides that we're using for tarnished plant bugs. We've gone from a quarter pound of Biodrin to a third of a pound of acephate, to where now we're using a full half pound of Biodrin, or three quarters of a pound to a full pound of acephate. So as I said, we've doubled and tripled the rates that we're using of those insecticides, and that's contributing to our cost. But that's what's driving our overall insect control program in Mississippi. And this is just showing the impact that ligus control has on other insects. This is showing the correlation between ligus control and aphid control. So you can see, as we increase our plant bug applications, we also increase the number of applications that we have to make for cotton aphids. Similar thing with spider mites. As we increase our plant bug applications, we see a dramatic increase in the number of spider mite applications. So as I said, tarnished plant bug is really what influences our overall management program in the Mid-South. And so that's what's different than other areas of the country, such as the Southeast or out West, where they have other different primary pests. And so these data, the results that I share today may not be completely representative of the entire country. I just wanted to make that point. So why is it important to know the value of the neonicotinoid insecticides? If any of you were in Don Parker's talk yesterday during the consultants conference yesterday afternoon, he talked about the fact that the European Union uses what's called a precautionary principle. So when they're registering a new insecticide in the European Union, in any of those European Union countries, basically, if that insecticide provides any risk at all to pollinators or to human health or to the environment or anything, then it won't be registered. Fortunately, in the U.S., the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency uses a risk-benefit analysis to register new products. And so that's very important for us, because it takes the value of these insecticides or herbicides or fungicides or anything, takes their value into account, along with any risk that they may provide to the environment. So currently, you saw Gus's presentation. There's a lot of research that's focused on the risk of all insecticides. But right now, there's very little work being done looking at the other side of that, looking at the benefit of the insecticides and their value. And so that's what I'm going to present today. And the reason for this, as Gus talked about, is declining pollinator health. There's a lot of factors, as you've heard Gus mention, a lot of factors that are involved with decreasing pollinator health. But pesticides are by far getting the most press right now. That's what you're hearing about all the time in social media, on the news, in magazines, newspapers. Wherever you look, you're hearing about pesticide effects on pollinator health. And the reason for that is, as Angus talked about, is a lot of environmental groups have kind of used that as their platform to attack all pesticides. And, you know, there's a lot of work that's been done that shows you can go and look at the wax, the pollen that's stored in beehives, and you can detect all kinds of pesticides in there, not just ones that we're using in agricultural production, ones they're using to control parasites in the hive, things that homeowners are using, fungicides, herbicides. You can find everything in these beehives. And so Europe took the stance that they're going to ban neonicotinoids for 2 years and see what happens with pollinator health. We also talked a little today about Transform. As you know, we in the Mid-South, we had a Section 18 for Transform in 2012. We got a full Section 3 registration in 2013. And I wanted to include this as well, because in reality, we should have had a Section 18 in 2011 and the full registration in 2012. But what happened is, as Don said yesterday, for those of you that were there, Dow submitted one of the largest packets, the largest packet that's ever been submitted to EPA. But EPA still came back and said, we need these additional studies looking at pollinator health. And it went above and beyond what the EPA normally required for a registration. So all insecticides, as Angus mentioned, are going to be under attack in the near future. So as I said, my talk's primarily going to focus around tarnished plant bug because, as I said, it is our key pest in the Mid-South. We're averaging 6 to 7 sprays per acre annually. Highs can range anywhere from 10 to 15, and it's often high rates and tank mixes that we're using for this insect. So this is a list of classes of insecticides that are currently registered for tarnished plant bug control. You can see the pyrethroids, organophosphates, and carbamates. We currently have resistance to all of those insecticides. So that really leaves us the three classes in yellow, the neonicotinoids, the IGR diamond, and then the sulfoxamine transform, that are the only classes of insecticides we have labeled that provide good control of tarnished plant bugs. I have the pyridine carboxamide on there as well, carbene, but I don't have that highlighted in yellow because it's never provided good control of tarnished plant bugs in the Mid-South. It's very good out west on the western tarnished plant bug, which is a different species. It provides good control out there, but doesn't provide very good control in the Mid-South. So we're really down to three classes of insecticides. If we take off one of those, we'd be back down to two. And likely, if the neonicotinoids were to fall, I would imagine that Transform would fall right along with it. So the objective of the work that I'm going to talk about is to determine the value of neonicotinoids in Mid-South cotton. So our treatments, we included three treatments in this trial. We had cotton that we grew without the use of any neonicotinoids, cotton that we grew with neonicotinoids, and cotton that we grew with neonicotinoids plus Transform. We planted this on May 20th in 2013. We used a Bolgard 2 variety and harvested it on October 11th. All of our plots, we scouted them twice a week, just like a consultant would scout his crop. We tried to do all management practices just like a grower and a consultant would do. Our insects were controlled based on the Mississippi State recommendations. And all our agronomic practices were the same across all those treatments, things like fertilizer, herbicide, defoliant irrigation, and all that. And that's going to be important because we incorporate that into some of this value calculations. So this is looking at some of the data. This is showing the number of thrip sprays in our different treatments. In the two treatments where we used neonicotinoids, we had to make one foliar insecticide application for thrips. Where we didn't use a neonicotinoid, we made three foliar applications for thrips. So these are our thrips treatments that we used. In our two neonic treatments, we used Aris as our seed treatment, which it includes imidacloprid as the seed, is the insecticidal component. Where we didn't use neonics, we had the fungicide and nematicide components of Aris on that seed and sprayed a pound of Orthene in furrow. So where we used the neonics, we made one application of Bijern at 3.2 ounces. Where we didn't use neonics, we used dimethylate, acephate, and an application with Bijern. We tried to mix it up as much as possible. So then moving into tarnished plant bug control, and I know this is a kind of a busy slide, but I'm going to take a minute to explain it. So what this is showing is tarnished plant bug applications and populations throughout the season. If you notice, there's a vertical and a horizontal dotted line. That vertical line that's going up and down is basically separating pre-flower from the flowering period. And that horizontal line, so we sampled those populations two different ways. Pre-flower, we used a sweep net. Post-flower, we used a drop cloth. So to set this graph on the same scale, I just calculated our populations of, as a percent of our thresholds using those two different methods. So the horizontal dotted line is 100%, so that's basically our threshold. So anytime the population went above that line, we made an insecticide application in those different treatments. And really the only point I want to make from this is that we made six total applications where we used neonic. We made seven total applications in the treatment where we didn't use neonic, as well as in the treatment where we used neonic and transform. And you can see where most of the, you know, those applications occurred throughout the season. So we were right along with our state average in terms of number of applications. The circles indicate where we sprayed, which is when those points went above that threshold line. So this is where it starts getting kind of interesting. This is showing for spider mite applications in these different treatments. You can see, and the way we did this, we did it on a rating scale of 0 to 3. Basically 0 means no mites. 1 would be there's some mites in the field, but nothing to be concerned about. 2 would be we probably need to spray, and 3 would be holy crap, they're out of control. So we made our applications when we averaged 2 across all of our plots. And you can see where we didn't use neonics, we made needed to make two applications for spider mites. Where we only had neonics included, we had to make 1 application. And you see that that's a little bit below that threshold, but we were making a tarnished plant bug application at that time, so we knew it would be better to go ahead and mix it in. We were so close. As I said, we tried to do what a grower would do, and I think any of our consultants in Mississippi, if they were that close, they would mix something in since they're going across the field already. So that's why we made that 1 application. And then where we used transform in the mix, we were able to time those applications to where we didn't flare the spider mites as bad, and we didn't have to make any mite applications. And then this is showing for cotton aphid. For both the neonic and neonic, no neonic treatments, we had to make 1 application for cotton aphids. And then with transform, it has good aphid activity. So in our normal plant bug sprays, we didn't have to make any applications for cotton aphid. So these are our insecticides that we used. And I tried to use the most economical and effective options in our rotations. So in our first treatments with the neonics and the neonic plus transform, we used imidacloprid at 2 ounces. It was a generic imidacloprid. And then followed that up in the neonic with Centric, which is a little bit better plant bug product than imidacloprid in the neonic treatment, and then transform in the other treatment. And then followed that up right before flowering with an imidacloprid plus diamond mixture. And then in the no neonic treatment, obviously we couldn't use those centrics and things like that we normally recommend during the pre-flowering period. So we used acephate, Vidate, and then again that acephate plus diamond application right before flower. And then moving into the flowering period, this is where we started getting into some of our mite and aphid sprays. You can see those treatments there. The acephate plus bifenthrin, we brought in another transform application. That indigo portal application, that was actually a 3-way mix there. We were trying to control plant bugs, aphids, and spider mites at that time. And so those are our different treatments used during the flowering period in all of those treatments. So this is where we're really trying to get to. And, you know, the attack has been on the neonicotinoids, and this slide is just showing the total amount of active ingredient that was applied to these different treatments. So you can see where we didn't use neonicotinoids, we applied about twice as much active ingredient across all insecticides to those plots compared to the treatments where we use neonicotinoids. And then starting to get into the value, which is where the rubber meets the road and why this is going to be important, you can see that where we didn't use neonics, because we had to make those additional applications for spider mites and cotton aphids, without the neonics, you know, we spent a lot more money than we spent where we used neonics. You can see $186 with no neonics versus $99 and $114 where we did use neonics. And then looking at the yield from those plots, no significant differences in yields, but there is some, you know, a little bit of variability. So then what I did, or actually I worked with Larry Falconer, our economist at Mississippi State, and this is basically looking at the gross return. So this is the value of cotton based on the yields that we got. It's calculated at 78 cents a pound. So you see there's about a $90 advantage there to where we use neonicotinoids, or we lost $90 where we didn't have neonics. So then we also included all of the fixed cost in this, and we did this. Larry did this based on the crop budgets from Mississippi State Extension Service for the cotton budget. So we included things like seed costs, technology fees for the Bolgar 2 and Roundup Ready Flex, fungicide and nematicide seed treatments, fertilizer, scouting, weed control, plant growth regulators. We incorporated everything in there. And I have the weed control highlighted in red there. The reason for that is that's another thing that may be different in the Mid-South compared to some other areas of the country. We have multiple weed species with resistance to glyphosate, so weed control is probably going to be a little more expensive in Mississippi than it might be in a few other areas. I know in the Southeast they have the same type of problems. But all of those that are kind of a maroon color, it's a little hard to see in here, are things that you know, that we had to adjust based on what we did in terms of fertilizer, plant growth regulator, the number of applications, things. And ones in black were just basically fixed costs that are, you know, don't change. And so when we factor all that in, this is basically what we end up with. The only thing I didn't include in that was the price for lime, because that's something that every year we don't have lime put on fields, and so it's hard to figure that in. This is just based on what we used in this year. And you can see, without neonicotinoids, we wouldn't grow cotton anymore in Mississippi. And even with the neonics, you know, we're kind of on that ragged edge where our net return's only around $40 an acre. But that's still better than losing $21 an acre without having the neonicotinoids available. So this slide's just showing the cotton acres planted in the Mid-South compared. This is the average for all the states in the Mid-South: Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, Tennessee, and Missouri, compared to all the other states across the belt, excluding Texas. And I didn't include Texas in this because they just grow so much cotton and it stays so stable that it really doesn't reflect what's going on in the rest of the country. But you can see that initial decline around 2006 was primarily due to commodity cost. Commodity prices. Cotton prices were low, soybean and corn prices were high, so everybody's cotton acres dropped during that time. But you can see in the Mid-South, which is the red bar, we've gone way below where the other states were, way below our average. Those other states have rebounded back somewhat close to historical levels in terms of averages. And that difference now is due to input costs associated with weed control, insect control, and a lot of the other things that we face in the Mid-South. So if we lost neonicotinoids, you know, in most areas of the Mid-South, at least the Delta areas where we're dealing with tarnished plant bugs, I think our cotton acres in a very short time would essentially be gone without this class of insecticides. And you can probably make the same case for any of the insecticides out there, and that's the kind of things that we need to start doing, is showing what the value of these insecticides are, so the EPA has that other piece of the puzzle when they're making decisions about new insecticides and about re-registration of some of the older insecticides. All of these insecticides that we use will be coming up for re-registration at some point. I think the pyrethroids are under review right now. And so there's a chance that any of these could be lost through that process. So with that, I'll just thank Larry Falconer, our economist. Thank Chip Graham, who provided the seed treatments and treated the seed for us. And also Cotton Incorporated, National Cotton Council. And with that, I think we have a little time for questions if anybody has any. All right, thank you all.